So I want you to try and picture something for a second. Try to visualize 0.2 nanometers.
Good luck with that. I mean, it's basically impossible.
Right. It defies human intuition completely.
Right.
I mean, 0.2 nanometers is roughly the size of a single silicon atom. To kind of put that in perspective for you, a standard strand of human DNA is, what, about 2.5 nanometers across?
Yeah, around there. So we're talking about a fraction of the width of your DNA.
Exactly. And right now, today, engineers are building technology where the internal pathways, the literal roads that make your devices think, are separated by merely 10 to 15 of those individual atoms.
It's mind-bending.
It is. I mean, you have 10 atoms standing between a functioning microchip and just totally catastrophic thermodynamic failure. So today we are taking a deep dive into the latest teardowns and engineering reports from the Tekken Legion.
Specifically looking at TSMC's new 2-nanometer GFET architecture.
Right. Our mission today is to explore how the semiconductor industry just violently collided with the absolute boundaries of quantum physics. We're going to look at how they completely reinvented the microchip to basically keep Moore's law on life support.
Which is a huge deal for anyone who likes buying new tech.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll get into how this alters the DNA of upcoming devices, like the iPhone 18. And critically, why crossing this atomic boundary is inevitably going to hit your wallet hard.
Yeah, the economics are just as crazy as the physics here. But, you know, to really grasp the genius of TSMC's 2-nanometer solution, we first have to understand the terrifying physical wall that engineers smashed into at the 3-nanometer mark.
The quantum wall.
Right. Because we aren't just talking about making processors run a little bit faster anymore. We're talking about the complete breakdown of classical physics.
Which we're actually already seeing the leading edge of in the consumer market, right?
Right.
Like, look at the 2026 handheld PC war.
Oh, yeah. Perfect example.
You've got these device manufacturers shoving current high-end processors like the 4-nanometer Ryzen Z2 Extreme into these tiny chassis. And sure, the benchmark performance is incredible.
It works.
Right, exactly. But they are just violently struggling with severe thermal throttling and like this incredibly rapid battery drain when you push them.
Because they generate heat way faster than a compact device can actually dissipate it.
So why is that happening? Why is the heat so unmanageable now?
Well, it comes down to Moore's law, you know, that historical cadence where we double the transistor density on a chip roughly every 2 years.
Shrink the transistor, use less power, make less heat. That was the rule.
That was the rule, yeah. Historically, shrinking meant efficiency. But when you compress these components down to like sub-3-nanometer scales, those classical electrical engineering rules just die. They cease to govern the system.
And that's when quantum mechanics takes the wheel.
Exactly. If the physical barrier holding an electrical charge back is only 10 atoms thick, the electrons just stop acting like discrete particles following a set path.
So what do they do?
The wave function of the electron becomes the dominant factor. At that microscopic scale, you hit this phenomenon called quantum tunneling.
Quantum tunneling. Okay, break that down for us.
So in a standard transistor, you have a gate that regulates the current, right? When the gate is closed, the electricity is supposed to stop.
Like shutting a door.
Right. But when that physical barrier between the source and the drain is reduced to just a few atomic layers, an electron's probability wave literally extends through that solid wall.
Whoa.
Yeah. The rogue electron essentially exists on the other side of a closed door without ever actually having traveled through the physical space in between. It just tunnels through.
Okay, let me try to put a visual to this for you listening. Think of it like designing a high-pressure hydraulic system, right? When your metal pipes are thick, the fluid travels exactly where you direct it.
Right, it's contained.
But as you miniaturize the system and you shave those pipe balls down to these microscopic tolerances, the structural integrity just fails.
Yeah.
It becomes like piping high-pressure water through a literal sponge.
That's a great way to put it.
The closer you pack the channels, the more the water just bleeds straight through the solid walls. You lose pressure. And in the processor's case, that escaping rogue electron creates massive electrical leakage.
Which manifests directly as wasted power and insane amounts of heat. The thermal density becomes completely unmanageable.
Just a tiny superheater in your pocket.
Basically, yeah. I mean, this wasn't just a minor engineering hurdle. Analysts were literally preparing to declare Moore's law officially dead because we had seemingly reached the thermodynamic limit of silicon.
Wow.
You just cannot actively cool a processor if billions of individual transistors are simultaneously bleeding current through quantum tunneling, you know, even when they're supposed to be turned off.
Because the sponge is leaking.
Yeah.
So engineers couldn't just keep shrinking the existing leaky pipe, right? They
No.
had to completely reinvent the way a transistor actually holds electricity.
Precisely. They had to scrap the legacy architecture entirely.
And that legacy architecture is the FinFET, right?
Right, the Fin field effect transistor. This was the undisputed king of semiconductor design from, gosh, 2012, all the way up to the 3-nanometer Apple silicon we saw on the iPhone 17.
Okay, so how did the FinFET work and why did it fail?
So imagine the silicon channel carrying the electrons is protruding vertically from the base, kind of like a microscopic shark fin.
Okay, I'm picturing a shark fin.
The control gate, the part that switches the power on or off, drapes over that vertical fin to control the flow.
But if it drapes over a vertical fin, simple geometry says it's only wrapping around three sides, right? The left, the top, and the right.
Exactly. The bottom of the fin is completely unwrapped. It's totally exposed to the base substrate.
Ah, okay. So at larger sizes, like 10 nanometers or 5 nanometers, that three-sided control is probably fine.
It was plenty. But down below 3 nanometers, that exposed bottom edge becomes the Achilles heel. It's essentially an open door for all those electrons to leak out at that sub-3-nanometer scale.
So, I'm going to use a culinary analogy here to make this stick. The old FinFET is basically a hard shell taco.
A taco. Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, think about it. The shell only covers the bottom and the two sides. The top is wide open. So when things get messy, or in this case, when quantum tunneling happens, the filling inevitably just falls right out of the open end.
That is actually, yeah, that is incredibly accurate.
Right. So what we really needed was to upgrade to a burrito.
A 360-degree atomic burrito.
Exactly. A tightly wrapped burrito that locks all the ingredients, the electrons, safely inside. And that's TSMC's radical new 2-nanometer solution, the JFET.
The gate-all-around field effect transistor using nanosheets.
Okay, so explain the nanosheet geometry for us.
So TSMC engineers realized the only way to kill quantum tunneling was absolute electrostatic control. They had to seal that open door on the bottom. So instead of a single vertical fin, they stack ultra-thin horizontal ribbons of silicon on top of one another.
Like stacking planks of wood, but nanometers thick.
Right. And there are microscopic gaps suspended between each ribbon. Then they meticulously pour the high dielectric gate material into every single gap.
Filling all the space.
Exactly. It completely surrounds each horizontal ribbon, creating that 360-degree encapsulation.
The burrito is sealed.
The burrito is entirely sealed. The gate material acts as a continuous physical barrier in every direction, which just completely shuts down the pathways for quantum tunneling.
So what are the actual numbers on this? Does it neutralize the heat problem?
Oh, completely. The Tick and Legion teardowns show that this 2-nanometer JFET yields a 25 to 30% reduction in power consumption at ISO speed compared to the last generation.
Wow, 30%.
Or if you want, you can crank it up and get a 10 to 15% speed increase at the exact same power draw. It's a massive strategic victory.
That's huge. But there's another really cool advantage here with the nanosheets, right? Something called variable channel width.
Yes, and this is where it gets incredibly elegant. It fundamentally changes how companies like Apple design their silicon blueprints.
Because with the old taco, the FinFET, the width of that vertical fin was rigidly locked in by the manufacturing process.
Right. If a chip designer wanted to push more electrical current to make a really fast core, they couldn't just make the fin wider. They literally had to just slap more physical redundant fins onto the chip side by side.
Which is super wasteful, right? It eats up a ton of physical space on the silicon.
A massive footprint. But nanosheets eliminate that. Because the ribbons are stacked horizontally, engineers can use the lithographic mask to draw those sheets as wide or as narrow as they want.
So you can have ultra-efficient E-cores or efficiency cores by drawing really narrow nanosheet.
Exactly. They sip near zero battery. And sitting right next to it, you can draw super wide nanosheets to build high performance P cores for maximum electrical current.
All on the exact same die.
All in the same guy. It's infinitely granular.
Okay, so now we have this perfectly sealed, hyper-efficient atomic burrito. We've neutralized the heat, and we've liberated all this extra space because we don't have to bolt on useless fins anymore.
Right.
What do device makers actually do with all that newly liberated space and power?
Well, they build absolute monsters.
Which brings us to Apple and the A20 Pro. Because there's this unwritten law of semiconductors, isn't there? He who secures the newest node rules the empire.
Without question. And Apple used its massive capital to pre-purchase exactly 100% of TSMC's initial 2-nanometer capacity for 2026.
100%. So they just locked everyone else out.
Yep. Qualcomm, MediaTek, Intel, they all just have to wait in line. Apple bought the whole initial run.
Man. So this boasts the A20 Pro chip, which is destined for the iPhone 18. But based on the architectural debugs, Apple isn't just taking that free space and slapping in, like, six more standard CPU cores, right?
No, that would be a waste of the node. Instead, they allocated the space to two highly specialized hardware blocks. First, a desktop-level ray tracing GPU.
Which means native hardware acceleration for complex lighting in mobile games without melting the phone.
Exactly. And second, and more importantly, a colossal neural engine.
A colossal neural engine. Okay, this is the catalyst for the on-device AI revolution we keep hearing about.
Right. Because instead of pinging cloud servers to process AI requests, the iPhone 18 is designed to run billion-parameter large language models, or LLMs, natively on the local hardware.
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate here on behalf of you listening. Do we really need tens of trillions of operations per second sitting in our pockets?
I mean, people ask that a lot.
Right. Because isn't cloud AI already doing a perfectly fine job for the average consumer? Like, I ask my phone a question, it pings a server, and I get an answer in a second. Why do I need a supercomputer in my jeans?
It's a fair question, but relying on the cloud has massive structural flaws for what AI is evolving into. First, latency. Even a one-second delay breaks the illusion of a real-time assistant. But the real issue, it's a privacy and security nightmare.
Because my data is leaving my hand.
Exactly. By moving the LLMs entirely into local memory, your most sensitive data, your emails, your text messages, the visuals on your screen, never actually leaves the device.
It's totally offline.
Completely. Yeah. Which allows Siri to evolve from this, like, clumsy voice assistant into an actual autonomous agent.
What does that look like in practice?
It means the AI can visually read your screen in real time. It can analyze highly secure offline medical records or private work emails and perform complex multi-step tasks.
Like reading an email, drafting a reply, and checking my calendar all at once.
Yes, and doing it in milliseconds, securely, because it doesn't have to transmit anything to a server farm in another state.
Okay, that is wild. But doing all that math on device has to wreck the battery.
Well, that's the beauty of the 2-nanometer efficiency. Apple is at this really fascinating battery crossroads right now.
Because power consumption dropped by 30% with KFET.
Right. So option one, Apple keeps the physical battery the exact same size as the older phones. If they do that, they could give users 2 full days of battery life, even under these heavy local AI workloads.
That sounds amazing. I would love a 2-day battery.
Sure, but option two is very tempting for them. They can shrink the battery cell significantly, maintaining standard 1-day battery life, and use that newly freed up physical space inside the chassis to do something crazy.
Like putting massive camera sensors in.
Exactly. Dropping in massive 1-inch camera sensors or making the chassis impossibly thin.
Which perfectly lines up with all the rumors about that ultra-thin iPhone Ultra tier.
Exactly. It's the 2-nanometer node that actually makes the Ultra physically possible.
But of course, putting an offline AI supercomputer in your pocket that doesn't melt your hands, It sounds like pure magic. But this whole cybernetic victory is grounded in cold, astronomical hard cash.
Oh, yeah. The manufacturing economics here are just brutal.
So let's talk about the $350 million toll booth, as I like to call it. Because manufacturing costs have absolutely skyrocketed, haven't they?
They've gone exponential. Let's look at the raw materials. During the 5-nanometer generation, a single 300-millimeter silicon wafer from TSMC cost roughly $16,000.
$16,000 for one wafer, okay.
Right, but producing that exact same size wafer on the new 2-nanometer node, that costs a terrifying $30,000.
It nearly doubled. Why is the toll so high just to get onto this new node?
It all comes down to the machines required to actually draw these nanoscale ribbons. They rely entirely on high NA EUV lithography machines.
High numerical aperture extreme ultraviolet.
Exactly. And these machines are built by one company on Earth, the Dutch firm ASML.
The physics inside these ASML machines are completely absurd. I mean, to generate this extreme ultraviolet light, which has a wavelength of just 13.5 nanometers, they literally fire a high-powered laser at microscopic droplets of molten tin.
Yeah, falling droplets of tin, which turns them into plasma.
It's insane. And then they capture that resulting flash of light, bounce it through these atomically perfect mirrors, just to print the blueprint onto the silicon.
And because that plasma reaction is so complex, a single one of these high-NA EUV machines is the size of a double-decker bus.
And the price tag?
An eye-watering $350 million. For one machine.
$350 million. I mean, that right there is what I call the new quantum tax.
The quantum tax. I like that.
because we all have to pay it just to cross the boundaries of classical physics. TSMC has to buy entire fleets of these double-decker bus machines.
Plus the massive R&D costs and the really low yield rates you get when a new manufacturing process spins up.
And all of that machine depreciation just rolls downhill. It gets baked right into the cost of the chips, which means corporations pay drastically more.
Which means the consumer ultimately pays the tax.
Right. The inevitable result for you listening is that base prices for these fall 2026 flagships, whether it's the iPhone 18 Pro or the Galaxy S27 Ultra, they are going to experience a tangible, painful price hike.
It's the unforgiving matrix of technology, right?
Yeah.
Innovation isn't just about the science. It's heavily dictated by macroeconomics.
You either pay the toll of innovation or you die.
Literally, you're crushed by evolution. Because app developers are going to assume that local AI hardware is present. If a manufacturer tries to save money by staying on a 3-nanometer or 4-nanometer node, their devices will feel obsolete instantly.
They won't be able to run the new software.
Exactly. You pay the $30,000 wafer premium or your company falls irrelevant. There is no middle ground anymore.
Wow. Okay, let's bring this deep dive home. Because the journey we just traced is incredible.
It really is.
We started with the sheer terror of an electron randomly leaking through a 10-atom thick wall.
A leaky sponge.
Right. And we saw how the industry had to completely scrap the old shark fin design and build a brand new 360-degree suspended nanosheet architecture.
The atomic burrito.
The atomic burrito, which sealed the leak, killed the heat, and culminated in us putting a desktop-class, cloud-independent AI supercomputer directly into our pockets.
All of which is subsidized by $350 million bus-sized machines shooting lasers at Molten Tin.
It's just spectacular. But before we sign off, I want to leave you listening with a final, somewhat provocative thought to mull over.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, think about this concept of on-device AI, severing our reliance on cloud servers. For the last 15 years, the ultimate power in the tech world has been heavily centralized, right?
Very centralized. Locked inside the massive cloud server farms of big tech empires.
Exactly. If they hold the compute power, they hold your data and they hold the control. But if these 2-nanometer chips actually allow our personal pocket devices to become entirely autonomous.
Executing billion parameter models offline.
Right. If we can do that offline securely, how might that permanently shift the global balance of power? Are we about to watch the ultimate power in the tech world slowly drain away from those massive corporate server farms and move directly back into the pockets of the individual user?
It's a massive decentralization of intelligence.
Driven by a gap of merely 15 atoms. It's fascinating.
It really is.
Well, thank you for joining us today on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.